Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we have a subject that is not often discussed, especially publicly. And when I received the material that I have in front of me right now, The Price of Ovulation, The Truth About Fertility Drugs and Birth Defects and a Solution to the Problem, I really was curious. My guest is Terrence Mix. He is an attorney, and we're going to be talking for most of this hour about this subject matter. And the reason that I feel it's so important to bring it to the forefront, and this is my personal positioning on it, is that we need to understand that what we put into our bodies makes a difference. And for those women, and men need to understand this too, for those women who are going to choose to have children, this is a critical point of information, literally a book of information that you should know about. So you come from a positioning of intelligent understanding about how important it is to be aware of what you put into your body. Terrence Mix, I want to welcome you to the show.
My pleasure. Believe me, I've been looking forward to this for quite some time.
Well, I want my audience to know about you. Your background is quite fascinating. You are a man that never thought your life's path would end up taking you into the realms that it has of experience. You're a graduate of the University of Southern California and Hastings College of Law in San Francisco. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, he is an attorney. You've been a member of the California State Bar since the 4th of January of 1967. You've been in practice for 41 years plus, and your specialty is it's a subspecialty of drug product liability, litigating against a majority of the major pharmaceutical companies in the country. And we're going to be talking about some specific products. You've been involved in lawsuits for well over 24 years. You have just been battling all kinds of people. You have been involved with the FDA. And in 1981, you were elected president of the Los Angeles Trial Lawyers Association, and for 12 years you sat on the board of governors of the California Trial Lawyers Association, now Consumer Attorneys of California. You've done extensive writing about litigation techniques, various strategies, but your specialty is drug product cases. You like to be called Terry, and Terry, when I opened up this book, first of all, the cover on it is just phenomenal. The very first sentence that you had grabbed my attention immediately. You said, over a period of 24 years, you had represented 8 malformed babies whose mothers had conceived following the use of clomiphene citrate. And if I mispronounced it, please correct me.
No, you did it absolutely correct.
Now, I had not a clue about this component. And when I started into your book, I was so amazed at the information that was in there. And my heart went out for every woman who has ever wanted to be a mother, and maybe for whatever reasons she couldn't be one, and so she gets involved with fertility drugs. We hear of all kinds of things via media, but I have not heard, and maybe it's just that I haven't been in the listening mode or river of information. Tell us about the case that started you to become involved with bringing back to the forefront regarding drugs and unborn babies.
Yeah, well, this the original case, the original fertility drug case involving Clomid was the very first case involving a pharmaceutical product that I ever handled. And I was very young, somewhat inexperienced, and of course the book, as you well know, kind of follows that initial case and my career substantially mm-hmm. with regard to fertility drugs in particular. And it had a monumental impact on where my professional career went after that particular case, which amazingly I won. I say that because, quite frankly, as the book discloses, I was not that well prepared when it began. I had been only practicing for 7 years, and I'd never handled a similar case. I had product liability cases, you know, with, mm-hmm. when the widget breaks and somebody is injured, that kind of thing, but never a pharmaceutical product, which involved a lot of science and medicine that I had not been exposed to. So getting involved in this particular case was really an introduction to the whole field of pharmaceutical litigation that was quite eye-awakening to me. And as a consequence of that case, it just reformed my whole career and my goals in life as to what I want to do. And probably the most significant thing about it is that, unlike most injury cases, because I was handling all types of cases, you know, auto accidents, slip and fall accidents, product liability cases, but with a product like a pharmaceutical product, it's being used by hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you, in a given case, make a discovery about a connection between a particular drug and a side effect, and it is not being warned about in the package insert or the product labeling, you are doing something that could potentially influence tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people. So all of a sudden, this became very, very important to me. With regard to Clomid, I was so drawn into this situation that actually I did more research immediately after the case than I did before, which is not the way to do it if you're going to have any hope of succeeding in a lawsuit, but that is the way it turned out. And eventually, in 1975, I started pounding the FDA about, because I started finding more and more things about in the literature that were not really in the drug company's records that indicated that there was a risk of birth defects. In particular, at the time, I was focusing on the drug's ability to cause abnormal chromosomes. And with regard to that, as I learned, there was actually twice the frequency of Down syndrome in the pre-market clinical studies, nothing that was warned about in the literature with that's attached to or goes with the drug, the basic product labeling. No reference was made to that. And that was in a study done in 1972, was reported in 1972. Again, a study I should have been aware of because that was a couple years before the trial. And then there was another study where they showed that first trimester spontaneous abortion, that's the first 3 months of pregnancy. Spontaneous abortion is it's a medical term for a miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a study published in 1973 by two doctors in France by the name of Bouet. And they found that there was, when exposed to fertility drugs, there was an increased incidence of spontaneous abortions, first trimester spontaneous abortions, that had an increased incidence of abnormal chromosomes versus the general population, and even versus infertility patients who had tried fertility drugs but had been unable to conceive with the drug, but later on their own had conceived, and their incidence of abnormal chromosomes in first trimester miscarriages was lower than those who conceived at the time of treatment. And so that was very indicative of the fact, along with Down syndrome increase in the premarket studies, that I thought that there was an increased risk of birth defects associated with abnormal chromosome.
Right.
I made the pitch to the FDA. I sent them letter after letter. You need to at least put a warning out there. Finally, they figured out a way to get rid of this mixed kid from the West Coast, and they had actually invited me to attend a hearing before an advisory committee of the FDA.
All right, Terry, I'd like to stop you there for just a minute.
Okay, sure.
Before we go any further, because I want to bring a few points out here. and they're right in your book. You say, no one can state with any degree of certainty how many children are born annually worldwide with congenital malformations from induced pregnancies. And in 2002 in the United States alone, that's just 2002, approximately 2.5 million women, 2.5 million women of childbearing age had used fertility drugs. About 750,000 of them used the drugs annually. And with the proliferation of fertility drug usage throughout the world since the 1980s, including their use during vitro fertilization, this indicates what you say is an international tragedy of major proportions, which, with the statistics that you have in your book and the studies, and that's something that's very important for you, those of you who are listening. In this material that he has in his book, you are going to find studies that you can research yourself. You are going to find statistics that are on record in a number of different areas. And I want to go, Terry, back to the couple that were your very first case, because these were just two very, very nice people, Heinz and Ingrid, Breimhorst. And this goes back to the 60s. And June 1970 was when they had this child that they had so long awaited. Tell us what happened to that baby.
Well, Mark was born in 1970, right, on June of 1970, and the doctor, because of the fact that they just didn't have diagnostic tools back then like they do today.
Right.
Or for whatever reason, did not know at the time of the delivery that this child was going to be born with congenital malformation. And what happened is he was delivered without hands. Mm-hmm. Both of his hands were non-existent. So his both arms ended at his wrist. He also had a facial palsy and a neurological abnormality in his ability to rotate his eyes. He had a club foot condition. It was a condition, the syndrome of which was called Möbius syndrome back then, probably still is, I guess. And this was just devastating to them initially, as you might guess.
Oh, of course.
But that's the way Mark was born. When I first met him, which was a couple years later, he had hooks on his hand, which is had a great dexterity with even at a
mm-hmm.
very young age.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, during that trial, we did a film, A Day in the Life of Mark Breimhorst, that showed not only that what his disability was, but we wanted to give a complete picture and showed that he could do things like even pick up a dime,
mm-hmm.
Which were, the whole family was just so devoted to this young child that I was always proud to call, the family, they were my friends.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, after the trial, I met the family and my daughter, who was 2 years younger, and she was there, and I remember kind of somewhat like a victory party, we were there, and my daughter was just sitting down on the floor playing with Mark, and she didn't really pay any attention to his disability.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very vivid thing I still to this day remember.
Well, children don't have the attitudes that adults do. They just say, oh, you're different, that's fine. Let's get on with playing. They don't do that. But this couple, now, this case came to your attention because of an associate who brought it to you and said, I would like for you to take on this case because you've dealt in certain areas. But like you said, you were very green in certain aspects of law, but the only way you learn is by doing. And so you jumped into this and found out that this particular drug that Ingrid had taken was called Clomid, C-L-O-M-I-D. C-L-O-M-I-D. So if any of you listening want to investigate it, you can look it up. Now, thalidomide had been discovered to be devastating, and this I remember hearing about this and the devastation. In fact, I can recall as a you know, as a child, seeing these things, these pictures, and even sometimes in some of the medical material that I had the opportunity to find out about and hear certain doctors that were around me when I was growing up talking about this horrific drug and the children, the mothers that had taken thalidomide during pregnancy, all the horrible deformities that occurred with their children. And these women organized a huge, you might say, support group of their own to help deal with all the variables. This was horrific, and I don't even recall the number of children that were affected by this drug. And weren't the Europeans more aware of this than Americans, and isn't that why it was finally taken away?
Right. The drug thalidomide was actually manufactured in Germany, and between the late 50s and early 60s, the discovery of the association between that drug and these limb reduction type birth defects was in November of 1961. Now, there were about 10,000 babies that were severely malformed. And it wasn't just limbs. There were also some other organs that were affected as well. But 10,000 in Europe. Fortunately, it had not been authorized or licensed for marketing in the United States at the time, but it was out for clinical studies because actually the same company that manufactured Clomid had the license to market it in the United States as soon as it got approval from the FDA. And this is where the story about Francis Kelsey comes into play, which is, by the way, you might remember is referred to in my book.
Yes.
It was an interesting thing because she basically on her own stopped this major tragedy from occurring in the United States, for which she received awards, including an award from President Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she was quite phenomenal. She was very thorough as a researcher.
And actually, that disclosure, this is significant, because in 1960, and we're talking about 2 years earlier, the pre-market clinical studies with Clomid were started, and they ran through 1967, so a seven-year period. The revelation in 1961, of course, late 1961, occurred during the middle of the preclinical studies on Clomid. After that, the FDA required animal studies that weren't required before that,
mm-hmm.
surprisingly. But this was done by the company, and lo and behold, they found that when they gave the drug, they administered the drug to pregnant rodents, rabbits and rats, they found that it caused birth defects.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was all the more of the reason why there should have been a specific design to the studies to find out whether or not the drug had an impact on the embryo. Another thing that came into play at the time is the fact that Clomid is administered generally prior to conception. So how could a drug before conception cause an abnormality of an embryo? And as a matter of fact, that was a big challenge in the Breimhorst case at the beginning. But what I learned was that there was a long half-life. Clomid has a very long half-life of 5 days, but it's not 5 days and then half is gone and another 5 days it's all gone. It's a half of a half and a half of a half and a half, so on. So you have a gradually decreasing curve. And they actually had found a Clomid or its metabolites in feces in women that had taken it for as long as 6 weeks after the drug had been ingested. And I found a number of records when I went to the drug company where the FDA was actually very curious about the ability of the drug to stay in and whether it might harm the embryo.
Mm-hmm.
And I found many documents related to that. Yet it still got cleared, and there was never any warning. As a matter of fact, if you took out a package insert on Clomid today, there is not any warning whatsoever.
That's the
appalling thing.
Yeah, the factor that this, what they call the half-life study, I am very much aware how dependent on a person's cellular physiology that they can hold in the fat cells of the body ingredients that they take in or drugs that they take in. And this was a long time ago, but when I read this, it just triggered a memory that I had that they found in various drug rehab research that the chemistry of the human body, especially with women, with the fat cells in the women, that the fat cells hold materials. And of course now so much research is coming out how people, women hold toxins in their body, and there's conversation about be aware of what you take in because it's going to affect the fetus. I mean, that's a given. And for a drug company to have the attitude of, well, it doesn't make any difference, all of this, everything a woman takes in, was before her pregnancy and during her pregnancy and after her pregnancy, one affects her body first and foremost, but that baby is feeding off of everything. Everything that you take in goes into that child. And so the effects that you mention in this book and the stats that you have and the reports that you have, I can't tell you. It was really almost emotional reading for me, because I have known of people whose children have been born with defects. And many times they were so confused, and they thought, well, gee, this maybe is something genetically in the family. And it wasn't. It was something that happened chemically within the body. And you bring out so much information about this that I think that there's another situation that has to be brought out. And you may have to help me with it. Anencephaly? What is this no-brain condition?
Okay.
I was appalled at that. Would you pronounce that correctly
yeah,
for me?
It's anencephaly.
Anencephaly, okay.
Okay, and it literally means without a brain.
Right.
Anencephaly is one of a class of birth defects called neural tube defects. The most popular one, well, popular in so far as most people have heard of it, is spina bifida. So what happens in the fourth week after conception, the neural tube, which ultimately forms the spinal column and the cranium, starts closing into a tube, okay? And so what you're dealing with is a non-closure of either the spinal column or the cranium or both. If it's a non-closure of the cranium, what happens is the brain gradually gets destroyed, so there's just a nubbin. It actually starts out to be a brain, but in the end, it's not. And then if the spinal column or portion of it does not fully close, it's called spina bifida. So those are the two. There's also an encephalocele. There are other types of neural tube defects, but those are the two main categories.
You also bring out in your book, and it was the Merrill Drug Company that was putting out Clomid, that they had in their records that one in every five pregnancies during their clinical investigation resulted in a spontaneous abortion. And you bring out a fact regarding miscarriages, first trimester abortions, which are done naturally by the body, are very important because they're highly associated with abnormalities of the product of conception, usually caused by abnormal chromosomes. So the body naturally seems to want to do this, to not allow the birth of a child. That's what miscarriages are all about. So something is not balanced in the body. And then you state that Clomid, this drug, might be a human teratogen. Explain what that is. That's spelled T-E-R-A-T-O-G-E-N. That is a new word for me.
Okay, it's just a fancy word for saying it causes birth defects.
Uh-huh.
Teratogen is a chemical or product that actually causes abnormalities to an embryo.
Okay.
The study of birth defects is called teratology. If you are an expert on birth defects, you're a teratologist. So this was a new word to me when I had that first case, too.
Now, there were animal teratology studies, which you said came in after. But during the course of this case, which is very detailed, and by the way, I want to compliment you. It's easy to read. It's not something that I feel like I'm, you know, just going through something that's so dry that it would not be comfortable to read. Your book is very readable, and it's written in a way and put together in a way that the layperson can understand it, including the reports that you bring in. And this all in your book was taken from your actual file.
That is true. For some reason or another, I had retained them over the years, and up until 2004, which is when my wife approached me about possibly writing this book.
Mm-hmm. Which I think she's to be complimented, because I think you're doing us a big favor by writing it. Now, one of the things that you brought out when you were going through this trial is the factor that some of the experts regarding the effect of drugs that had been involved in clinical studies for this had not been given the correct information. What they did was make their analysis based on what they had assumed was correct information, and they went, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't recall the one doctor's name, but he had done his studies. He was a very ethical man. He wasn't someone that was trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. And when you were interrogating him, it came out that he had to base his study on the information of previous studies. So he wasn't going to go back and repeat what somebody had done before. That's a bit scary.
Yeah. Well, it's, unfortunately, that's the way a lot of these things are done. In the middle of that first trial, there was Dr. Tyler, who's from UCLA, and he testified that he had not even seen the animal studies. You know, you'd think that this was something that should have been given immediately to all the clinical investigators. Remember, they're all in the middle of the pre-market clinical studies. Clinical studies are human studies.
Mm-hmm.
And he testified that he didn't basically get that until after the drug had been approved. Probably the most critical thing, and was something that the jury was very, very upset about, is the fact that the study really wasn't designed to ascertain basically the number of babies that were being born with birth defects. They claimed to have recorded birth defects, which they did. There were some that reported. There was in the first, in the pre-market study, there were 58 children born with major birth defects. But what I found out is that the studies were not designed to find out the total number of children that had birth defects.
Mm-hmm.
And that was inherent in the basic protocol or design of the study. And as a matter of fact, the doctor admitted on the stand that he relied upon whether or not a baby had a birth defect, based upon whether the parents sent him a birth announcement that referred to it.
Mm-hmm. I remember
reading about how unscientific that is. And the problem was that the clinical investigators, the ones that had the duty to report to the pharmaceutical company, were fertility specialists who got women pregnant and then after 3 months would send the patients back to referring OBGYN. And it was the OBGYNs that were delivering the babies and would know whether or not the baby was born with a birth defect, not the fertility specialist. And so a lot of those reports were not getting back to the doctors that had the duty to report to the drug company. What I learned, what it was a lot more insidious than that, because what I learned, there were actually reported birth defects that the company did not forward on to the FDA. And that is what is so egregious about this particular conduct at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It took
Absolutely.
An excessive amount of research to find that out, but I did.
Yes, and sadly, it is still going on today. Now, you make a comment in here about Clomid is an elective drug, and it's not essential for any health reason. But this is one of the things that you really wanted to see on any kind of documentation that was going to be printed when it was given to someone. So, of course, when you get this stuff, it's so tiny, you need a magnifying glass, 100-fold plus, just to be able to read it because the print is so tiny. But at least you have something to read if you want to read, but that's not available even today. You believe that there should be a comprehensive warning about all risks associated with its use. It's so critical for that, and that we need to be able to make informed choices when we're using Clomid or any other fertility drug, and I'd say this is me saying it, any kind of drug. You need to understand what potential side effects could be. Now, one of the things that came out in your research, you won the case, like you said, and you did an outstanding job with it, and you were able to wade through volumes of material. But it caused you to start some thinking that you wondered if Clomid could damage or alter chromosomes, and of course, in today's world, they're finding how DNA can be altered from simple things, and chromosomes can be affected. This is something that's coming up more and more in discussions regarding the cellular changes that can be done. But drugs can be mutagenic. M-U-T-A-G-E-N-I-C. Explain that word, and so my audience understands what is happening if a drug is mutagenic.
Yeah, well, you know, you have chromosomes. Every cell in your body you have, if you're normal, you have 46 chromosomes, 23 pair, okay? Now, within the chromosomes are genes. Something that is mutagenic could leave the chromosome itself unaffected in terms of whether it could cause an abnormality. Of course, if it causes an abnormality to a chromosome, it is also mutagenic. So basically, anything that's mutagenic can alter either the chromosome or the gene within the chromosome. That's basically what the meaning of the word is.
Now, Terry, we're going to be taking a break. My guest today is Terrence Mick. He likes being called Terry. His phenomenal book is The Price of Ovulation. Now, this is the truth about fertility drugs and birth defects and a solution. Not just presenting the facts that can be really overwhelming, but there is a solution to this. When we come back, we're going to be giving you some of that information, also talking a little bit about the FDA. Don't go away. This is fascinating material. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTaP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. My special guest today is Terrence Mix. He likes being called Terry. His book is The Price of Ovulation, The Truth About Fertility Drugs and Birth Defects and a Solution to the Problem. Terry, I wanted to step into the portion of your book where you're dealing with the FDA. And you had compiled so much information and material regarding the pharmaceutical companies. You have documented all kinds of things relative to this, but you went into the FDA. You wanted to have them, because of what you had discovered, you wanted them to put a warning on any kind of product that was out there with this. What happened?
Well, the first time, this has actually been multiple efforts over a period of many years. The first time, I think I mentioned earlier, I was in it, I actually made a presentation at an FDA advisory committee,
mm-hmm.
at which there was an attendance of about 15 scientists from all over the United States. And, of course, I was somewhat a fish out of water, I guess. I presented everything that I had learned and all the research, and they thought enough of it. They wouldn't buy my argument that I had convinced them that it caused birth defects, but they were concerned enough that they actually ordered the drug company to do further clinical studies to verify whether or not the drug was causing birth defects. To this day, those studies have never been done. But as you know, the book documents all of the correspondence related
mm-hmm.
to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then later in the 80s, I sent more correspondence. In 1994, I sent a 40-plus page letter with attachments. Actually, that was 29-page letter and 41 documents attached, laying out all of the evidence, including copies of published studies that I knew they already had anyway, but I put it all together,
mm-hmm.
and I never got a reply. But it was received. I verified that it was received by the FDA. And most recently, on December 4th, 2007, this is more relevant for us today, I filed a citizen petition and attached three chapters from my book, which laid out basically all of the evidence of why I believe that Clomid or clomiphene citrate, the generic, is a human teratogen. And I have just been forestalled for now almost a year and a half after I filed it, even though the FDA says we consider this very important, we have an ongoing study of this, and we'll get around to it. You know, it was kind of like the check is in the mail kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And but it is as recently as last July, and this is very important, on July 2nd of 2008, the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, it's part of the federal government, which has ongoing studies, had announced the results of a 7-year study looking at, of all things, Clomid. And what they found was that Clomid was associated with 170% increased risk of anencephaly. Remember, we talked about that earlier.
No brain.
140% increased risk of being born without limbs. And there were a couple others as well. The point being that here was an official arm of the federal government found a positive association with this abnormality. Or these two, actually there were four different abnormalities they reported at an increased incidence. And how do I know the FDA knew about it? Because I got an abstract, which is a summary of the study. So I had all the statistics from the study.
Mm-hmm.
It was given to me by the FDA because of my harassing them for information about where they were. They sent it on. It hasn't been officially published in a peer-reviewed journal yet, so the media hasn't picked it up. But your listeners will know well in advance of that that the CDC did report this at a meeting of the Teratology Society. Remember I talked about teratologists.
Mm-hmm.
Teratology Society is the National Organization of Birth Defect Experts. at Monterey, California on July 2, 2008. So the FDA has been aware of that study in addition to everything else I have in my book. They have that study as well. And yet they are still sitting on their hands. And I would urge any listeners out there to write John Jenkins, MD, who is the director of the Office of New Drugs at the FDA, and demand that they do something about this, because they are just sitting, I have no idea how long they're going to sit on it. But I filed a formal petition with the FDA called a citizen petition, which is, by the way, identified on my website, and including the case number and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody that wanted to go directly to that could.
Yes, and that would be TerenceMix.com, T-E-R-E-N-C-E, Mix, M-I-X.com.
Correct.
There's also the, the ugliness, that's the word I will use, of the relationships of pharmaceutical companies and the link with the FDA. You bring out specific names in your book about people who working for the government. They also were getting consulting fees from the pharmacological companies. They just the information, and there has been a big expose on a lot of people who have become lobbyists, and I won't go into that, who have been former government officers or officials, and they end up going into the lobbying positioning, and they have these tremendous links with the pharmaceutical companies, and there's been so much complaint because it's like there's two lobbyists from the pharmaceutical companies for every representative that's up on Capitol Hill. So that's a lot of people pounding the pavement. And money corruption has had a big impact on truth being received or sent to the public. As an attorney, because of what is being done, I mean, what would you say to my listeners regarding this? I mean, where you've mentioned this one gentleman that you recommend, and you mentioned his name again, that we send something to, but what do we do as individuals? We have to be informed. You have written a book about this, but the information is not available to the general public, and most people don't read this stuff. They're trusting their physician.
Well, you know, this is the very reason why I wrote the book, is to get the word out, because the FDA wasn't getting it out. And it's shows like yours that provide a forum to get information to people that basically are being screened from them so that they don't see the true risks associated in this particular case with a fertility drug. Of course, it applies to many, many drugs.
Oh, yeah.
This is an exemplar of what goes on in the drug industry. So that's the importance of the book, which has many facets to it, as you know, is to let the reader know that this is what goes on. I mean, and the book goes back over 30 years, but it's also going on today. The
mm-hmm.
whole scenario is basically the same. The most effective thing that you have as an individual is your ability to write your congressman, your U.S. senator, to make demands that certain things take place. Now, there was a major legislation that took place in the fall of 2007, a major congressional act, and it's referred to in my book.
Mm-hmm.
It identified the whole scenario of how it played out. And unfortunately, it didn't deal with a lot of the major problems. It did give the FDA more powers post-marketing than they had before it was passed. But the major problems, quite frankly, are the fact that you have the fox guarding the hen house effect. You have the drug companies doing the very studies that they have a huge economic incentive to overlook bad things about their drugs, because that's the only way they're going to get their money back is get it out there. And if they say enough bad things about it from their studies that they are doing, the drug companies are doing their own studies rather than some independent third party.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I believe that not only this can be fixed, and I make several suggestions in the book as to certain things that should be changed. But when you talk about who can do anything or what you can do about it, is call the FDA, call your congressperson, call your state or your United States senator, and let them know how you feel about it. If they get enough pressure, there will be certain things that can happen and will happen, I believe.
I agree.
And if you want somebody out there as a spokesman, if you get an open ear, I'll be glad to fly to Washington, D.C. and talk to them myself.
I agree. I'm going to quote from your book. We are placed at risk of developing undisclosed adverse reactions, many of them severely disabling or fatal. It has been estimated that more than 50% of all serious side effects from drugs are discovered only after those drugs have been approved by the FDA as safe and effective. Your words, this is a tragedy, it's also a frightening reality. Perhaps acceptable if the adverse reaction were a rare event. It is inexcusable when it could have been detected and prevented by properly designed pre-market study. And only with true detached and objective assessment of clinical studies of drugs and devices will we ever achieve complete and candid reports on their safety and effectiveness. Terry, your book is absolutely awesome. I'm just absolutely overwhelmed. I've talked with some other medical associates of professionals, that I felt that they needed to read this. This is so important for women, period. But I'd say, guys, pick it up, because this is something, it's for everyone. It really is. And the information is documented. So if you wanted to research it yourself, you could. The name of the book is The Price of Ovulation, The Truth About Fertility Drugs and Birth Defects and a Solution to the Problem. Terry, quickly, the solution to the problem. If someone is or has taken something like this, there is a nutritional supplement that can assist them. What is that supplement?
The supplement is cholesterol. One of the things that I learned, and I'll try to make this as quick as possible, is that you're an embryo for the first 8 weeks, and then you're a fetus. The embryonic period is when your organs are being formed. Okay? The embryo has to have an adequate supply of cholesterol to properly form its organs. The explanation of why and how is in the book, but I won't go through that right now. We just don't have time.
Because we're almost out of time.
But there are animal studies that show, but all of the studies show that Clomid is a cholesterol-inhibiting drug. Now think about it. It's like Lipitor.
Mm-hmm.
It impairs an enzyme from converting dismosterol to cholesterol. That is well established. It's actually in the package insert, although it's well camouflaged. But the fact is that you have a cholesterol-inhibiting drug that is being taken by a woman, even though prior to conception it carries over into the early stages of pregnancy. And it is well established that lack of cholesterol causes congenital malformation.
Yes.
And that is key. The animal studies that have been done to date show that if you can give a cholesterol-inhibiting drug to a pregnant rodent, and it will cause some specific malformation. You give the same rodent, the same type of rodent, the same cholesterol-inhibiting drug, and at the same time a cholesterol supplement, and guess what happens? No birth defects.
And folic acid is important. You give out so much good information here. Ladies and gentlemen, this is so important. Terry, we are out of time. For those of you listening, Terrence Mix has been my guest today, The Price of Ovulation, an awesome book. I recommend it highly. TerrenceMix.com. TerrenceMix.com. Go to his website. Check things out. That's what this show is all about, to empower you so that you know what your options are. No one has the answers to everything. But if you're not informed, how can you make a conscious decision? Know, learn. And Terrence, I want to thank you for committing so much of your life and your time to bringing information forward for people like us. Thank you so much for being my guest.
Okay, it has been a great pleasure. And if you ever want to have me back, give me a call.
I'll definitely do that. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, He's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Pete Smith here with OrthoTeb Health Shoes. These funky looking shoes, invented by a medical doctor, will make you feel better. Who has time to work out these days? Wear our sandals or clogs around the house, go shopping, wear them on the treadmill. You'll burn extra calories, you'll tone and trim the legs, thighs, lower abdomen, rear end, your love handle area. You'll simply feel better. Check them out on the web at orthotebb.net.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna, and I realize that we don't have a heck of a lot of time left, so I won't be able to take any calls today, but I want to say to you most sincerely, for those of you who have been listening, it's not just about fertility drugs. It's so important for us to understand, one, we have the right to question, two, we do need to be informed. And three, when you have material where people have been directly involved with things, it's wise to listen. You may not be a chemist, but, you know, if you go and you talk to a pharmacist and ask a pharmacist, if I'm taking something, what are the side effects? I had to do that relative to a situation with my husband when 20-some-odd years ago he was given 14 medications. He had had a heart attack. And the pharmacist was curious as to why my husband was bringing in all these prescriptions to be filled. And he said, well, this is what happened, and this is it. He said, do you know what you're taking? And my husband said, well, no, this is what the doctor is prescribing. He said, you really only have one medication out of the 14 that's related to the heart issue. The side effects of each and every other medication is of such a nature that they have to prescribe something to offset the side effects. Now, there's a place for medicine, and there's a time when you want to have it, but you need to be informed. What the pharmacist basically was telling him is, are you sure you need all these? Is this really what you need? So if you have a loved one that is taking 14, 15, 25, 30 prescriptions, ask questions. Realize that what goes into your body is going to have an effect. Just like some people cannot tolerate tomatoes, other people can, and it's great. But you have to be willing to examine and to question. And when you do that, you will find that your world is going to change quite a bit. Why? Because you take that positioning of personal responsibility. And there's a lot of people who sincerely, sincerely are dedicated to being able to help you, if possible, in the medical professions, in the nutritional areas. But you know what? We have to ask questions ourselves. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of good information. There is a lot of research that's being done by some very dedicated people. But we have to ask those questions. So I wanted to mention to you also, don't forget I've got a class. If you're in the Pacific Northwest and you'd like to come to my class on April 25th, we're going to be talking about mind vision. And I'll give you more information about it tomorrow because we're almost out of time today. But remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You have a right to think, to evaluate, to question. And I like to think that part of what I give you as a gift through this show is the opportunity to find out about people who are doing exactly that and who are bringing to the forefront what they most sincerely want you to know about. It really does make a difference. And you can make a difference if you are proactive for yourself. Be well, be happy. If the sun's shining where you are, go out and dance in it. It's a great day to be alive. This is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow, my guest, well, we're going to be talking with about chronic pain, self-treatment, Bernard Schatz. More information about health and wellness. Don't miss it. Talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.